Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 28th day of August, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call. The year is flying by and the summer is almost by at this point. In any case, it was a really busy weekend, whole lots going on, and I struggle with how to start off this morning, but I think this is perhaps a good way to put it. There's a lot of stuff we've heard before, some stuff we're still going to hear again and again and again, and yeah, other stuff that we're certainly sick of hearing. But in some cases, it's at least important to pay attention. And that's especially true when it comes to stuff they're trying to focus your attention on so that you don't notice the other stuff. So here's a primary example. We'll do this one quickly because, yeah, we've all heard it before. There's a video up online recorded in New York City Monday morning showing the New York Police Department and their propaganda-equipped cars that are scrolling a marquee on top of their roof lights telling people, do your part. Stay 6 feet apart. Good grief. On then next to the smoke that surrounds a very real fire in Hawaii. And parts of this, folks, would almost be funny if they weren't so deadly and satanically tragic. Here's one of them from the Gateway Pundit, which focuses on the humorous aspect, if there is such a thing. The cause of the catastrophic wildfires that killed thousands of people, many of them not yet even admitted openly, has reportedly, says the government of Maui County at least, been identified. But problem is, in the process, it completely blows up the far-left socialist World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, etc., climate change narrative. Oops. Maybe they'll just have to console themselves with buying land for pennies on the dollar from dead people. Fox News is reporting it too. Officials in Maui said the fires were caused by, drumroll please, downed power lines and failures by the state's main power utility company, socialist run as it is, to do anything even remotely reasonable like maintain their system. Due to these facts, it says, the government of Maui County, Hawaii has filed a lawsuit against the Hawaii Electric Company and its subsidiaries for neglecting, some would say fatally, to properly power down live electrical equipment and power lines amid a red flag windstorm earlier this month, which they say, when the improperly maintained lines went down anyway and started fires in grasslands, caused, well, at least part of the problem. And as Zero Hedge notes in their coverage, there's a whole lot of questions you're not seeing answered here, like, did they have help? And trivial things like, why'd they block the roads and shut off the warning systems, too? But isn't this interesting, and I guess not that surprising, Hawaiian Electric Industries Incorporated surged as much as 43%, says the piece from Zero Hedge, in pre-market trading in New York Monday morning, after the utility released their statement that the power lines were de-energized for more than 6 hours in Lahaina when the afternoon fire broke out on August 8th that eventually leveled the resort town in West Maui. Said their CEO, we were surprised and disappointed when the county of Maui rushed to court even before completing its own investigation. And added Sheila Kimura, president and CEO of Hawaiian Electric, we believe the complaint is factually and legally irresponsible. Hey, that at least makes it consistent with everything else we're seeing today, folks, doesn't it? It is inconsistent, she said, with the path that we believe we should pursue as a resilient community, committed and accountable to each other as well as to a wise future, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Unfortunately, the county's lawsuit may leave us no choice in the legal system but to show its responsibility for what happened that day. But the key, they believe, is that the Hawaiian Electric Company outlined what they called important facts about August 8th. The fire at 6:30 a.m., the morning fire, appears to have been caused by power lines that fell in high winds. And then, and I gotta admit, this is telling, the Maui County, isn't that the same county government? Fire department responded to the fire and declared that it was 100% contained. And later, after they left the scene, declared it had been extinguished. And then about 3:30 p.m., a time when all of Hawaii's electric power lines, they say, in West Maui had been de-energized for more than 6 hours, the second fire, they call this one the afternoon fire, began in the same area. And the cause for that afternoon fire has, say it with me folks, not been determined. And given the story I'm going to go to next, I'd suggest don't hold your breath. And I will add one other observation here. When everybody is responsible and everybody points a finger at everybody else and there's a lot of smoke besides, isn't it usually the case that nobody ends up getting held to blame? That at least would be consistent too. All right, on to this piece from naturalnews.com and Lance D. Johnson, and it tells us something you're probably not going to hear from the three-letter communist news networks. Over 2,400. What? That's almost 2.5 times the official number missing and about 20 times more than have actually been declared dead, almost 3 weeks after the fire. And you heard that right, but let's read the whole thing. Over 2,400 kids are missing in Maui, but aren't being included in the government's official death toll. When massive fires began to ravage the island, says Johnson, back in early August, emergency management teams, SICK, were nowhere to be found. And as the fires raged, at least 74 emergency management officials were attending an annual FEMA disaster meeting, how convenient, just a quick hour and a half flight away on the island of Oahu. Top officials from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, you know the acronym, FEMA, and the Center for Aktung Homeland Defense and Security were preoccupied, it would seem, in the Pacific Partnership meeting, while one of the most devastating wildfires in U.S. history burned its way into and then consumed the town of Lahaina. But why, asks the story, are federal and state officials explicitly not talking about the 2,400 missing children in Lahaina? And I know, we're getting used to that too, but for different reasons now, aren't we? You've heard the summary before, but I guess it does bear repeating here. The firestorm, they say, fueled by tropical storm force winds, was not taken seriously. No emergency alarms were sounded. You know, hey, I can't help but think maybe they were taking it seriously. It's just that what they take seriously is not exactly for the same reasons you'd think. Evacuation routes were blocked. Local Maui residents said that a police blockade actually prevented the people from leaving Front Street in Lahaina as the wildfire came in. And during that horrific conflagration, vehicles burned in the streets, boats that were 50 yards out to sea burned, and people barely survived choking and burning in the Pacific Ocean's treacherous waters. In the aftermath, one could see droves of residents backed up on the roads that must have been blocked by billows of smoke and other barricades of fire and devastation, while the fires, plural, themselves took out more than 2,200 homes and displaced an estimated 4,500 people. And they don't say for sure, but that seems to be those that are still alive. As of August 21 this year, Maui County and the Maui PD have reported a death toll of only 115 people. But, notes the piece, and this is not really surprising, is it? The official reports are a sham. The FBI, Red Cross, and Maui Police have a missing persons list that contains about 1,000 people, still unaccounted for. But even this official missing person list falls far short of the harsh reality that over 2,400 kids are reported missing in Maui. And the mayor of the city, Richard Bisson, has yet to report on this grave reality. While multiple hundreds of kids were left to burn in Lahaina, and the corporate press has yet to even address the chilling reality and the failure of the government's so-called emergency response. Part of the reason this is hard to cover up, Hawaii officials have been encouraging families in Lahaina to enroll their children in other public schools outside the burn zone. The four schools in Lahaina serve more than 3,000 students, but only about 400 from the burn area have reportedly enrolled in other public schools. Around 200 more have signed up for long-distance learning, and at least 2,400 are left unaccounted for in the public cesspools. These figures, says the piece, don't even account for children who are homeschooled in Lahaina, many of which are probably missing as well. Yeah, folks, one more time, lots and lots of questions, lots of smoke, but for the most part, officials don't seem to be in any real hurry at all to answer the important ones. Here's a story that could have been the lead before it became just one more spark in a wildfire of corruption. It's from Zero Hedge, and it concerns weaponized collusion. Why is it, they ask, that Jack Smith's team, remember that scumbag, huddled with what else? The Biden regime-controlled White House before the Trump indictment. While the regime repeatedly claims that their puppet Just Us Department has full autonomy, yeah sure, just like the guy who can't even change his own diaper, a new report by the New York Post suggests otherwise. Weeks before special counsel SICK Jack Smith brought charges against the elected president, Donald Trump, for allegedly mishandling classified documents, which he actually had the authority to declassify, by the way. One of his top aides met with the White House counsel's office. Who could have thought it? Raising serious concerns about coordinated legal efforts, even if they're not really legal at all, against the Biden Fuhrer's top political opponent going into the next rigged election. According to the report, Jay Bratt, one of Smith's minions since November 2022, took a meeting with the White House on March 31st of this year with Deputy Chief of Staff for the WH Counsel's office, Carolyn Saba. And the two were joined in the 10 a.m. meeting by FBI agent Danielle Ray. And 9 weeks later, Trump was indicted by the regime's hatchet man. The 63-year-old brat also met with, and isn't that a funny way to put it, the 63-year-old brat also met with Sabe at the White House in November 2021 when Trump's legal team was in discussions with the National Archives over the return of those declassified presidential records from his Mar-a-Lago estate prior to the so-called formal investigation. And brat had a third meeting with the you-know-what House in September 21, this time with Catherine Riley, advisor to the White House Chief of Staff's office. But the logs offer no information about what was actually discussed at those meetings, and tell me why we're not surprised. Critics and legal experts, as if we still had any of those, question why Brat was taking meetings at all with the White House counsel's office while part of an active investigation of the likely opponent of the unelected fake president was still supposedly in progress. No, folks, what's in progress is what's been in progress. The proper word is coup. Then cover-up, consolidation of power, and execution of those that figure out what's going on. The New York Post story put it this way. There's no legitimate purpose for a line or DOJ guy to be meeting with the White House except if it's coordinated by the highest levels, said former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, one-time top federal prosecutor in the Southern District of New York, now gone completely communist. And as Mark Levin has noted, this is a massive story, which is why it'll be ignored by the Democrat Party captive media. That said, he notes, Brat not only met with Biden's staff at the White House while supposedly investigating Donald Trump just weeks before Trump was charged, Brat is a senior DOJ official who insisted on securing a warrant and sending an FBI SWAT team to Mar-a-Lago. And Brat stands accused by Stanley Woodward, who represents Walt Nauta in the document case, of extorting him because he allegedly told Woodward that the judgeship he is seeking has a better chance if his client turns on Trump. I guess there just really aren't enough crooked judge positions still open in the swamp, folks. And furthermore, continues Mark Levin, I'm forced to ask, where the hell are Trump's lawyers? They ought to file a motion immediately seeking a court order for all this information, the things that he and others have been talking about, and they should make a big stink about this outrageous news. Because all of this not only creates the impression of a conflict of interest, gee, do you think, but a conflict of interest in fact. When asked if he thinks the White House and special counsel were coordinating together, Rudy Giuliani told the Post, "You're damn right I do." Adding, what's happening is they've trashed every ethical rule that exists and have created a police state. Duh. It is, he said, the Biden state prosecutor and a Biden state police. Left-leaning and therefore almost unique constitutional lawyer and scholar Jonathan Turley of George Washington University told the outlet that the March meeting was particularly troublesome and added, quote, it raises serious obvious concerns about visits to the White House after Brat began his work with the special counsel. There is no reason, he said, why the Just Us Department, although I suspect he pronounced it wrong, should not be able to confirm whether this meeting was related to the ongoing investigation or concerns some other matter, said Turley. But hey, folks, I bet you most of us know the reason. Which used to be why it was considered such a bad thing to have even an apparent conflict of interest. Now, collusion, bribery, and quid pro quos are funny, I guess.
I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, what, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired.
And they put in place our bought and paid for shill. Ain't life grand? Two quick, arguably related stories from elsewhere in the Fourth Reich. First from Zero Hedge via Gun Owners of America. The disastrous consequences of the Republican-backed, misnamed Bipartisan Safer Communities Act just keep adding up, they note. And if it sounds benign, folks, you know it's a bald-faced lie. The so-called law passed last year through a compromise between Socialist Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut and Rhino Senator John Cornyn of Texas encouraged the Biden-Fuhrer regime to pass more universal unconstitutional infringements, masquerading as background checks via executive order, and more. Now the latest gun control comes in the form of funding cuts for school hunting and archery training programs, just in time for the new lockdown, masked and dumbed down school year. The Department of Sick Education cut off the funding due to the agency's interpretation, they say, of a provision in that so-called Bipartisan Safer Communities Act that bans taxpayer funds from being used towards, quote, training in the use of a dangerous weapon. And guess what? I think they really intend that to mean children's brains. But notice it doesn't stop them from funding scalpels to cut babies out of pregnant moms, or for that matter, even Zyklon B injections to kill just about everybody of any age they possibly can. So just to bring that great big whopping lie home, a related story, the Biden Fuhrer on Friday told reporters he's planning to request more money to kill more people with a new and even deadlier, well, he didn't say it that way, but we can guess, can't we? Coronavirus, not vaccine. Said the official White House transcript, whether the diaper wearer read it properly or not, quote, I signed off this morning on a proposal we have to present to the Congress, a request for additional funding for a new vaccine that is necessary that works. Full stop. Your guess is as good as mine what that really means, although I think we know. It works to kill people better, because it sure as hell doesn't work to prevent the spread of anything, unless we're talking about the spike protein itself. Much less prevent anybody, especially those that have destroyed their immune systems, from getting sick. Tentatively, the transcript said it will likely be recommended, and you know what that means, folks, they'll strap you down if they have to, that everybody get it, no matter whether they've gotten it before or not, unquote. Oh yeah. And this follows the rise in reports, whether they're true or not, of booga 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 BS.24/7 COVID cases in some regions, which has been accompanied by the return, whether the peons like it or not, of mask mandates and canceled classes by the dumbed-down businesses and so-called educational institutions that are drinking the Zyklon B, the Bud Light, or just plain Kool-Aid, depending upon which metaphor you prefer. Finally, a bit of good news next from an unlikely sector, and that might be the reason it's even better news. This is a summary of a number of stories, first from Zero Hedge, with a headline, The More You Indict, The More We Unite. Black social media, it says, erupts, and I hope you're sitting down, for Trump. For years, the piece begins, American leftists have yearned for the day they'd see a police mugshot of the actually elected president, Donald Trump, confident that it would positively and decisively terminate his political career. But thanks to an idiotic, bogus, and did I leave out any adjectives? Oh yeah, but you can fill them in for yourself. Indictment, sick, from Georgia that was clearly conceived and timed for maximum political damage by people that don't really understand too much about the law and maybe even political damage. Their wish was granted last week. However, the spectacle has now unfolded in a way that's surely causing a growing sense of horror among Trump's foes. Let me put it this way, folks. This story could be called, from the leftist media's, Aw Shit Files. Because not only has his booking at one of Atlanta's nastiest jails galvanized typical Trump supporters, it's also triggered a surge in support from an unlikely, at least so far as the left is concerned, venue, and, especially importantly to them, an essential Democrat constituency, black people. And note, most of the stories, considering how the socialist left takes all black support for granted and routinely labels Trump a racist, white supremacist, and any other purgative they can come up with, imagine the utter consternation they must be feeling as they witness a social media eruption of black sympathy for Trump over an arrest that, for many blacks, parallels the mistreatment they've seen for decades and they perceive that blacks have received in America's so-called criminal justice system. When people have seen something before, folks, it's kind of tough to tell them it's not deja vu all over again. You got to see one of the posters that's making the rounds. It has a picture of Martin Luther King Jr. on the left and his mugshot, dateline Birmingham, Alabama. And on the right, yep, the mugshot you've probably seen of a scowling, persecuted President Donald Trump. The caption above it says, history doesn't always repeat, but it sometimes rhymes. The first sign of trouble, says Zero Hedge's summary, came when people called themselves blacks for Trump, and another one that I can't even repeat here, but it starts with the N-word for Trump, posted themselves near the infamous Fulton County Jail on Atlanta's Rice Street around the time of the booking. And then we saw blacks lining the street to cheer on the former president's motorcade and shouting, get this, free Trump. The on-scene displays in Georgia were just a precursor, notes the story, to the socialist media wave of black support for Trump 2024 that's still rolling. Quote, Trump's a brother now. I'm sorry, said this one. You go to jail in Zone 6 Atlanta, you a brother, says one man, while another says, quote, straight up, they effed up. And this one I'm just going to have to bleep the you-know-what out of. N***s like n***s that went to jail. They believe in that shit. We trust that. How about this one? Every real N-word, got to go to jail at least one time, says another man who's warned the Democrats that they, again, effed up, and they'll now face vengeance from a future President Trump. Quote, you think he ain't going to spin the block? Here's yet another enthusiastic black for Trump in 2024. Quote, man, they deep in the hood gangsters hollering about Trump 2024. A man on the street says Trump wanted us to get off our ass and get some money. He puts America first, says another. The emotive gent in the convenience store hits a recurring theme, notes Zero Hedge, anger about, quote, ooh, I can't say this, I'll have to bleep it. Well, let's just say a bad word, actually a string of them, that they've applied to the Biden Fuhrer, relentlessly funneling billions of dollars into the Ukraine war, while conditions in America, things that they actually care about, continue to deteriorate. Clutch Williams highlights the hypocrisy of the far left, saying, quote, these other presidents be saying good stuff to you, but doing bad stuff to you. Trump might be saying some bad stuff, but he was doing some good stuff. Check the record. And this same man says that many in his audience voted against Trump, but now have had a change of heart. Quote, at some point, many of y'all have changed your mind, and now you know you support Trump, but you're doing it on the sneak. Come on, y'all. Let's own up to it so we can all support this man together. Unquote. And that, folks, seems to be the real problem that the left is scared, well, you know whatless over. And you can guess what they're going to do about it, right? Say it with me. Double down. Keep lying. And then double down again. So, yeah, it is encouraging to see people seeing through it. And I follow this up with a story that, admittedly, I did a double take over. There was a national prayer at the federal courthouse during the Proud Boys sentencing hearing on Wednesday of this week, August the 30th. And guess what? Black Lives Matter, or at least some of them, are saying they intend to join the protests. Chris Sky says, stand in solidarity with the J6 political prisoners. And the hashtag is Free J6ers Now. Americans begins the piece from TGP and Alicia Powell will unify in prayer across the nation and around the federal courthouse in which every January 6th political prisoner is tried on August 30. As U.S. District Federal Judge, SICK, Timothy J. Kelly sentences the Proud Boys who were wrongfully found guilty of seditious conspiracy by Antifa-supporting jurors, which is part of the reason this is ever more interesting. The so-called U.S. District Judge will sentence political prisoners Enrique Tarrio and Ethan Nordine, while Black Lives Matter leader Mark Fisher, renowned Canadian activist Chris or Sky Sakosha, and former Black Lives Matter activist and rapper Ron J. Spike will be among the patriots leading the national prayer outside the E. Barrett Pettiman Courthouse on August 30th, while political prisoners Joseph Biggs and Zachary Rell will be sentenced to the next day, with more to follow. As the Gateway Pundit has previously reported, the Department of Justice is seeking literally decades in prison for each of those sentenced to the Soviet gulag. Finally today, a story that no doubt is intended to be obscured by the smoke and the other disasters that you're supposed to pay attention to instead of the continuing human tragedy that is a once great republic gone completely communist and outright totalitarian. This one comes from Jim Hofton, the Gateway Pundit, about government overreach, and it says, a Virginia Amish farmer's livelihood is on the line following Big Brother having raided and seized his property. The Fisher family farm, it begins, a source of healthy food, and there's the problem, folks, among other things, for local consumers in Virginia, has been raided by the VDAX, the Virginia Department of Achtung, Agriculture und Consumer Services. Samuel B. Fisher, who runs Golden Valley Farms, lost his livestock and meat processing facility, and they don't want you to have either of those, don't you know, as the state condemned and seized his property, resulting in not just loss of income, but a loss of trust, you think, in a community that prides itself on independence and sustainable farming, which are wonderful things and very much politically correct, unless somebody actually does them in a way that is, verboten to even learn about. Golden Valley Farms, it says, has been serving around 500 consumers through its farm membership program, and that sounds like they're trying to stay clear of Big Brother's control, and they needed to be taught a lesson. From the website, we're a family farm located in Farmville, Virginia, in Cumberland County, and although we hail from generations of dairy and cattle farmers, our program was established in 2019, and we help young children gather, wipe, and pack the chicken and duck eggs for you. And they produce 100% grass-fed raw milk. Uh-oh, there's another strike against them from Golden Guernsey cows and goats. And they're organic, non-GMO, and soy-free. Basically, a whole lot of reasons, like so many others nowadays, that they needed to be raided, and they were, and destroyed. Fisher estimates that about $10,000 worth of products were seized and dumped. His meat has been tagged administrative detention, and it leaves him unable to sell or even consume what he produces. And don't you know it, they don't want anybody to have anything even remotely like this. Arguably, Big Brother would rather you starve. Better we know about it now, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.